This is the Wintrust Business Lunch. Good afternoon. I'm John Williams. We're produced by Pete Zimmerman. We'll be here until 1 o'clock. Is Hannah DeVlantis back in the saddle for you all today? Pete, I know you do that show too. Get the big thumbs up on the other side of the glass. So that's good news for everybody. Although John and Pete, the guys that fill in, do a terrific job as well. Nice to have Anna back. And that'll be a little after 1 o'clock. It's 12:10 now. By the way, just on the entertainment front, Michael Phillips, the theater critic, the movie critic for the Chicago Tribune, was on with us a moment ago. And he said that you can watch the Disney Plus channel for a one-month trial subscription for $6. And that's the way you can see Hamilton. That's not the way I saw Hamilton. I know somebody who has the channel, and then somebody else set up a computer in my house and we use their password. I was not complicit in the crime. I was just an innocent bystander. I'm wondering, though, how you were watching it. That is, because of the draw of Disney and the properties that they have, did you subscribe to it for $70 a year? Did you do the one-year subscription? Or did you do it some other way that didn't cost you anything at all? You can call or text 312-981-7200. Just a little quick sample here. I'm just wondering how people are doing it. Because Michael brought up the fact that this is going to be, despite the $75 million outlay, a huge cash cow for the channel, the Hamilton show, the movie, if you will, of the Broadway production. Lee Sklink joins us now on WGN Radio. We'll talk real estate and business. And did you watch Hamilton over the weekend at all, by the way, Lise?
I did not, John, and I do, not to comment on what you did, but I do
think that... I did not do anything!
Didn't say it, but I do want to point out your comment about this being a cash cow for Disney in a sea of negative red ink for them. The company has launched this Disney Channel, and they are expecting really big things from it. But it won't make a dent in terms of, you know, trying to get everything back on the right side of the ship. Their cruise ships are in real trouble, and we're going to talk about travel in just a bit. But it is a one bright spot for the company.
312-981-7200 if you'd like to share. I'm just wondering, just as a quick little sample, how people are doing it, because you think they are going to at least make their investment back on that play, but I wonder how much money gets lost because people are watching with their friends, they're sharing passwords, they're just doing the trial subscription, but they're not being lured into 12 months, that sort of thing. So tell me what you got on that, and I know you do have some notes on Disney and other cruises, and let's talk a little bit about that, plus some of the real estate things that are happening in the Chicago area. Elise is on the line, and my number is 312-981-7200. Pete just whispered in my ear, you get how many? Can you join us on the radio for that comment, Pete Zimmerman?
We looked it up over the weekend, and I think Disney allows 7 accounts to be used per household.
Really? So maybe we were in compliance with the law.
I think you are okay.
However, inadvertent. So that's interesting. So they know full well that's happening or is going to happen. I wonder if an eighth account tries to sign in using that username or password, it won't work then, right?
So does that make you not a criminal if you thought you were breaking the law but weren't?
What an interesting ethical question. Hey, if you're purchasing a new home or refinancing your existing one, then you need to call Team Hochberg, your trusted local mortgage pros. This time, let's meet Donnie, Special Forces veteran, who called Team Hochberg to cash out $20,000 for home improvements. Before calling Team Hochberg, Donnie started refinancing with another lender. David analyzed Donnie's situation and advised him to cancel his rocket-loving lending loan because it was not the right loan for him. David is helping Donnie enhance his credit score to secure a HELOC because that was Donnie's best loan option. So let's just review. Before calling Team Hochberg, Donnie called somebody else. Didn't turn out to be the right option. They weren't going to help him. After calling Team Hochberg, Donnie is enhancing his credit to secure a HELOC, which is in Donnie's financial best interest. If you're a veteran interested in working with a lender who respects your service and who will always look out for your financial best interests, call Team Hochberg. That's 312-855-56-DAVID. Visit 56david.com. Tune into Home Sweet Home Financial. Home Sweet Home Chicago, hosted by David, Saturdays at 10 a.m., Homeside Financial is an equal housing lender. Their NMLS ID number, boy, I'm butchering this for you, David, is 1124061. Elise Glink joins us. ThinkGlink.com is the website to go to get more information from her. Let's talk a little bit about the travel business, by the way. You're a real estate and financial wellness expert, but do you follow the travel business, too?
Well, it's a business that a lot of people are trying to figure out what to do for their own enjoyment this year. And so from a wellness perspective, vacation is hugely important, but the statistics are showing us that very few employees are taking them right now. They're very, very nervous. And so what you're seeing across the country is companies say, please, don't burn out on us. Don't go crazy. Take some vacation days. And in fact, some companies even closed for an extra day, either Friday Thursday or today.
Wow.
In order to give their employees an even extra big weekend.
I have gone on so many cruises, I now get all their literature. It's amazing to me how much money some of these cruise lines send to us. And one that we all most often travel on has done something I've never seen them do, announcing sale prices, S-A-L-E, sale prices that they normally just don't do. And I thought, oh, that's probably a sign of the times. They've got to convince people to get back on the boats.
Yeah, it's interesting to see. Normally this time of year, you would be seeing people book up cruises at a fast and furious pace for the end of the year. All of the warm weather that people look for in those cruises that are kind of south and go head further south over the winter season in the north, a lot of people don't even know if those cruise ships are going to be running. And so when you look at the number of people who are maybe going to be traveling, cruises just don't, after all the negative publicity of people locked on board and, you know, just getting sick and the number of people who had COVID, I think cruises are going to have lots and lots of deals as the year goes on just to get anybody on board.
What about domestic travel? I guess the folks are packing up. A friend of mine posted a video. It's kind of funny because there are some people who you can imagine driving an RV across country, and there are those you cannot. Somebody who I never in a million years thought would do that is, in fact, driving to the East Coast with her family in a big old RV right now.
How are they liking that?
She'll let us know. But
if they're still speaking.
I said I'd give you 45 minutes before you turn around. But I think they're having a nice day. To be honest with you, it looks kind of fun to me right now.
There are a lot of people that we know, probably a half a dozen, who have rented various forms of vans or RVs. One of the biggest trends now in travel is buying a $200,000 or $300,000 souped-up van. Mercedes makes a big white van. You can get it in any color. And they're being built out inside so that people can literally live in these vans as they go across the country. The problem that some people who are actually buying these recreational campers are discovering is that a lot of the places that you would normally stop and spend the night are not open for business, or they have very limited numbers. So if you don't make your reservation far enough in advance, you might drive to one of these recreational vehicle areas and find that there's no place for you to plug in. And that's a real issue if you need to you know, use the facilities you were expecting to take a shower and whatnot. But overall, we're seeing travel down significantly so far, about three-quarters below where it was a year ago. And same thing with the air travel. Holiday weekend, you would normally see just everybody flying all over the place for July 4th. And this year it was down 70% from last year. Better than it's been, nowhere near where it needs to be.
European Union is still banning Americans. I suppose that'll change in time, but right now they wouldn't have us if we could get over there anyway, huh?
They don't want us. The Canadians don't want us. Mexico doesn't want us. We're not in high demand as a country at the moment due to the COVID and our you know, just the fact that it's considered to be by most of the world not under control in the United States. Even though Chicago and Illinois is doing better than a lot of other places right now, but the European Union released its list of countries that it will allow you to come in from. Algeria is on that list, Australia, Canada, Georgia, Japan, Morocco, China. All of those will be allowed, and a few others, to travel to the EU, and not Americans right now.
That's kind of weird, because if you had confidence in the test, and maybe they don't have a test they're sufficiently confident in, but I think a lot of us, if we got a COVID test, would probably believe the results, give or take the margin of error. You could make it mandatory to get through Heathrow or somewhere that you have to pass a COVID test at the airport or something like that. It just seems to me like this is not an insurmountable problem for the cruise lines and the airline industry. If the European Union wanted us to come over, they could accommodate us. You just wonder if it isn't a little punitive. Although, I don't know, does that make any sense? At the end of the day, they want tourists over there, right?
Well, they do. They're desperate for the dollars, and, you know, Americans are desperate to start traveling again. But I'm not sure it's the test or how fast you can get the results at the moment, or the fact that so many people seem to be asymptomatic and they don't know what makes a super spreader yet, or the fact that they're just annoyed with how, you know, this country is dealing with it. But I think it's instructive to take a look at what the universities in the United States are doing with regard to letting students back on campus. So Harvard announced today that it would let 40%, roughly, of its students come live on campus this fall. Everybody who comes to live on campus, and they're going to do it by sort of starting with the freshman class coming in, and then they're going to trade that out for seniors later in the year. But everybody who comes on campus will need to be tested every third day.
Wow.
And so I thought that was really interesting. That's the most aggressive testing that I've seen. But if you look at how people congregated over the course of the 4th of July, you can begin to understand why, mm-hmm. you know, universities are very nervous. Harvard, by the way, is the first to really make that official announcement. They're expecting students back on campus September 2nd, but other universities like Stanford haven't quite figured it out yet, and or our own University of Illinois.
Elise, did you say that they're going to allow 40% of the students to come back onto campus?
What they're going to do is allow 40% for residential living. So there will be lots of people that will not be able to live on campus. And this is from the reports today that are out. But they will also allow all of their programming to be online. So teachers will be teaching online, and there may also be classes in person. So I think a lot of those details are just starting to get sorted out.
That's weird because, all right, so then say I'm in Harvard, which is an international and national destination. It's not like they're just drawing from Boston. I'll bet more than half of their students come from elsewhere, outside of, say, Massachusetts, which means that then those students that want to go to school on campus have to find their own lodging there in the metropolitan area. And I don't know how safe or practical that is. I suppose they're going to have the same issue at Northwestern, where the tuition, room and board is $76,000. And I say that only to say that if you're going to pay $76,000 or whatever Harvard's charging, you want more than a Zoom call for your classes. So I just don't know how they justify that.
Yeah, it is going to be a question, although the report seems to indicate that Harvard will not be charging room and board for students who do not live on campus, which would bring down the cost some significantly. I don't know about Northwestern or other universities yet. I haven't seen any of those details. But I think it is hard to decide what's going to happen. And I think that you really also have to look at the economics involving the staff and faculty. So in this country, because child care is pretty much left up to the individual family, and you may have some child care companies, a lot of that is all shut down. If you're now expecting faculty to come back, one of the things that you're expecting is that their child care will be in place. And we're already seeing from a business perspective that the fact that child care is not in place for the vast majority of working Americans, that the burden of this is falling disproportionately on women who work. And there's been revolts at college campuses over the last 2 weeks most specifically at Georgia Tech, where I think it's 800 faculty members have written and signed a letter to the university regents to say they're uncomfortable with going back. They don't have all the protections in place. They don't want to be in a room with all these students teaching these big classes. Oh, and by the way, you know, they still have children at home who may or may not be going to school. And so there's such a really complicated back to work conversation that's going on right now. And I think the universities are just at the forefront of that.
Well, they've got the deadline that some of us don't have. Some businesses can put it off indefinitely, but here comes the end of August or September for schools that have to decide lodging or in school or not in school learning. It's Steve Bertrand's much beloved Marquette University. They announced last week that it's going to be one student per dorm room. And normally you'd have at least two kids in a dorm room. Now it's going to be one. Those other kids, if they're going to go to campus, have to find a place to live. What a hassle for the families.
On every level, right? Because if they still have younger kids at home and they've got older kids going off to college, or, you know, they're working for people who are in that position, it's hard up and down the line. There have been a number of studies that have been done looking at how comfortable people are with the idea of being in a room full of young people who just by all accounts seem less concerned about getting COVID or spreading it, whereas they're now being infected at a rate equal to that of anybody else in any other, you know, age generation or age cohort. And you can understand that people who are older, which typically university professors tend to be older, who have received tenure, are nervous about being with young people who may not be as careful.
Yeah, I've been hearing from professors and teachers as I've been advocating they got to go back to school. Say it's CPS, you hear from the teachers and they're saying, you know, you're not considering our angle on this. Before I let you go, the market's up again in Asia. I don't have the numbers in front of me right now, but the markets do seem to be imperfect. What are you looking at right now, Steve, the numbers-wise?
Right now, the Dow is up about over 300 points, I believe. Yeah, 355, NASDAQ 211, and the S&P 43.
It's just crazy. Elise, I don't know what your observation is about this, but the markets keep going up, even though lately the news has not been good on the COVID front nationally.
Right. I mean, the NASDAQ is up at basically an all-time high of 10,418, and that's mostly due to, you know, Google and Facebook and just to Amazon, a few of those companies that trade on that. And for an S&P, that's going up because those huge companies are now, we've got $4 trillion companies, which is just remarkable. For the Dow, it's a few companies doing really well and the others not doing great or holding their own. So I think you have to look beyond that to realize that something like 80% of companies not doing great in this country right now. And that's a real concern for long-term returns.
$4 trillion companies, Google, Amazon, Facebook, and Apple. I guess? Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. I remember when, I think it was Apple that first crossed the T threshold. Now there are four, huh?
Can you even imagine trillion-dollar companies, that sort of wealth is?
Nope. None of us can comprehend these numbers. Heck, most folks don't have $400 for a refrigerator. Elise Glink,
true.
You can think glink.com, the real estate and financial wellness expert. Nice to talk to you, Elise. You stay well.
You too, John.
It's 12:30. WGN Radio News with Steve Bertrand. Afterwards, we'll visit with Catherine Davis, the associate editor at Chicago Inno. Lots of stories on the Chicago innovation front coming up. We asked you how you've been watching Hamilton on that Disney Plus channel. And just a quick sampling of the text messages. John, I've got Verizon, and they offer Disney free for a year. Yay for us. John, we already subscribed to Hulu. And when Disney Plus came out, they offered a combo, Hulu and Disney, for $3 more a month. That's how we got Disney. John, I bought a one-month subscription, $7.62 with tax. Certainly cheaper than a ticket to the theater. John, I've got Verizon. You get Disney Plus for a year free. Hooray. Hulu, ESPN, and Disney, the subscription for us was $12. John, I do share my username and password with my daughter and my ex. John, Disney is not showing Hamilton to anyone with the free trial. A couple of you have said that.
They may not be offering that trial any longer. Just a heads up for those of you. Verizon subscribers get it free for a year, which is good for them. Catherine Davis joins us. Hi, Catherine. You were just listening to me wondering how people were getting the Hamilton production over the weekend since so many people were watching it. I'll ask you the same thing. Did you happen to take a look at it?
Hey, John, not yet, actually, because I haven't seen Hamilton live in Broadway or anything, and I kind of want my first time to be that theater experience as opposed to the movie. So,
oh, that's interesting.
I don't know.
That's what
yeah.
And now that it's left Chicago, you'll have to wait for it to come back or travel somewhere to see it, huh?
Right, yeah, absolutely. Definitely missed my chance when it was here. Too busy covering the tech news, I guess.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the tech scene. So here is Catherine Davis joining us on the Wintrust Business Lunch, the associate editor at Chicago Inno. Visit AmericanInno.com. What's the story that jumps out at you the most today? What's number one on your hit list?
Yeah, well, you know, a big part of our coverage lately has been focused on Chicago's black founders and founders of color in general. So, you know, I'm pretty sure Jim maybe talked to you about this last week, but we came out with a list of the nine black Chicago founders that have raised $1 million or more. And last week, it kind of followed up with a lot of those founders and wrote a separate feature just kind of detailing some of the challenges and also the triumphs that they've had as entrepreneurs in this city. Talked to some really interesting people. You know, the general consensus is just that, you know, approaching venture capitalists and asking for money is generally harder when you're black than if you were a non-white or a non-of-color person. And, you know, I talked to some investors around town who echoed these sentiments. A lot of them, you know that they have diversity problems at their firms and are trying to address that. You know, one particularly interesting investor, her name is Samara Hernandez, and she's the founding partner of Chingona Ventures, which it's not exclusively focused on investing in diverse founders, but that's a big part of its ethos. And, you know, she revealed the demographics of her portfolio, and the majority of them were actually black people, which is, you know, really interesting and really different to see in this industry as well.
I wonder if some of the black innovators, that is the entrepreneurs who are looking for that VC funding, might want to put a white person at the front of the pitch or their operation cosmetically, sort of the reverse of what sometimes companies will do when they want to acquire a minority contract in the city, try and get a white face for the organization just to better secure the funding, which is a slap in your own face if you're the person doing it. But I wonder if they consider that as an option sometimes.
Yeah, you know, there was one founder who told me that early on she was encouraged to bring on a white founder to ease any, you know, racist anxieties, essentially, that investors may have. And she didn't go that route because she was like, you know, I should be enough on my own. I'm a smart, capable black woman. And, you know, I have every right to be here in fundraising as anyone else. You know, it depends on the founder, of course, but that was one particular instance where she was like, you know, that just kind of delegitimizes me as an entrepreneur. And, you know, I'm fine to fight this battle on my own.
Do these minority entrepreneurs find themselves in a certain niche of businesses, or are they as widespread as any other population?
They're pretty widespread. You know, the people that I talked to, one was in cosmetics, one was in cancer, biotech research, another one is in artificial intelligence. So, you know, the companies really kind of, you know, spread out across industries that we see are often popular tech industries in Chicago to begin with. There's no particular industry that really stands out among minority founders here.
You were also talking, at least your site was, Jim Dahlke wrote about the Mom Project, which has raised $25 million. Can you tell us a little about that?
Yeah, so the Mom Project, they're a really cool local company, founded a few years ago, and their mission is to help women, and particularly moms who left the workforce to start a family, come back to it. So you can think of them as like a staffing platform. They work with, you know, major Fortune 500 companies like BP, Nike, Apple, and help these women reenter a job market that, you know, especially now with COVID, is extremely competitive. So they raised $25 million in Series B funding to, you know, kind of grow their platform and better serve the women that are coming to them now. They said they've seen an influx in people approaching them asking for job help, of course, because, you know, the economy has taken a hit and a lot of people are out of work and looking for new jobs.
Serena Williams is actually on board that campaign, right?
Yeah, that's right. She is a strategic investor. She's also on the board. And, you know, for anyone that doesn't know, she is married to Alexis Ohanian. He's the founder of Reddit and also the founder of an investment firm called Initialized Capital out in Silicon Valley, which is also an investor in the Mom Project. So, yeah, Serena Williams and her husband kind of have a big part to do with the growth of the Mom Project.
And just one other Stora that I noticed continues to get attention. Good for them. Foxtrot has opened up a new store in Chicago. They have eight now. They seem to be sort of the darling of the quick retail food business in the city.
Absolutely. You know, Foxtrot has really seen some incredible growth. It's interesting to see, you know, sort of the corner, the reinvented corner store be so popular, right? Because, you know, we have like a 7-Eleven everywhere here in the city. But, you know, I think Foxtrot really kind of differentiates itself because it has sort of, you know, more craft options and higher end options, which are, you know, popular amongst millennials and other people who can afford it. But they have a new store coming up in Streeterville, right at 535 North McClurg Street.
Well, is there idea? Look, there's plenty of convenience stores like 7-Elevens and Subways, you know, sandwich shops or convenience stores around some of these high-rise buildings in Chicago. And you think, wait, those people living there have some money. Why is it that they've got to eat Subway sandwiches and get their sodas from 7-Eleven? There's money to be spent there. You could open up a kind of higher-end store, make it ever so convenient and even small, but people will pay the money. I think that's what they figured out, right?
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, it's definitely a different kind of experience than your average 7-Eleven. Like, there's a coffee bar in there and tables you can hang out if you want. So it has sort of both a coffee bar vibe and also, you know, the convenience store. You can, like, grab a drink and pay for it and go. And, you know, of course, they're really well designed. They look really modern and updated and chic. And people are just kind of, you know, attracted to that aesthetic these days.
I've driven by them. I have not been in there yet because I only discovered it after COVID. So I'll set my foot in maybe the one not too far from us. That store is at 535 North McClurg, which is in Streeterville, not too far from us here. Okay, out of time. Catherine Davis, Associate Editor, Chicago Inno. Nice to talk to you, Catherine. Thanks for your help today.
Yeah, you too, John.
It's 12:42 on the Wintrust Business Lunch, the Business Minute from Steve Bertrand.
Wind the clock. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, your daily roundup of Chicago area business news. Boeing is expecting another test flight of its 737 MAX this week. They're testing changes to the fleet's control system. Boeing will use flight crews from around the world for the upcoming flights. The 737 MAX has been grounded for well over a year now because of two catastrophic crashes. Chicago startup Foxtrot has moved into Streeterville. The food store slash coffee shop slash community center has opened its eighth store in the city. It's got 10 overall, a couple of others in Dallas. And Chicago law firm Jenner & Block is in a fight with its landlord for back rent. The landlord sued in May. The law firm has countered that it is actually owed money, according to Cranes. Could be a key test for other rental disputes during the pandemic. That's the Wintrust Business Minute. I'm Steve Bertrand.
Orion Samuelson is checking the market scene for us. Is that you over there, O?
And that's me over here. And before I give you the bad headline that I've been waiting for, let me check the markets for agricultural commodities at the Chicago Board of Trade. The September wheat contract is up 0.75 cents. The July corn contract up 4 cents a bushel. July soybeans up 4.5 cents a bushel. So not a bad day in the grain market. Livestock futures at the Chicago Mercantile Exchange. The July lean hog contract is up 32 cents a hundredweight. August live cattle up 45 cents. And the August feeder cattle contract is up 95 cents at the Merck. Here's the headline, and I guess it was inevitable, but the headline sandwich fair canceled for 2020 due to the COVID-19 pandemic. For the first time since it started more than 130 years ago, the sandwich fair will not be held. The board of directors wrote last week, the decision to cancel the fair, which draws thousands of people to the area every year, based on the COVID-19 related information received from the county and state departments of health. However, a bright spot, fair official said the fair will be scheduled for September 8 through 12 of 2021. Larry Danowitz, who is president of the Sandwich Fair Association, said the fair has not been canceled since 1888. And he said that's one of the popular events claimed to fame. He said the fair did not close during the Great Depression in the 1930s, nor did it close during World War I or World War II, but it will have to be canceled this year because of the pandemic. He said patron, staff, and vendors' safety was the main reason why the fair was canceled. And he said the announcement didn't come sooner because officials were waiting for more state guidance that might apply to the fairgrounds. He did say, we're not good at social distancing at a county fair. And Brad Anderson, general manager for the Sandwich Fair Association, said the fairgrounds will remain closed for the rest of the year, since it's considered a mass gathering space per state standards. He said it will not be able to open until the state moves into phase 5. So that's the dilemma that's hit a lot of county and state fairs already, but the sandwich fair is certainly going to be missed.
Orion, can I ask you about that real quick? What was the date that was going to be held?
Dates were September 9 through 13. It always starts the Wednesday after Labor Day.
Okay. I mean, I guess that just gives you a sort of sense of how they're anticipating the pandemic backing off. Not even the first week of September backed off enough to hold an outdoor fair. I guess some of it's indoors, but it just gives you a sense of the timeline we should all anticipate about our lives going forward. That's going to be September, and they're still not going to do it.
Yep, and probably, well, of course, some state fairs after that already canceled.
Yeah.
In this summer of summers that I hope I never see again. The crop reports due out this afternoon will continue to show good progress in growth development for corn and soybeans in the Midwest because the weather has been pretty much ideal. That's your money on 720 WGN.
1251, just thinking about that weather on the Wintrust Business Lunch. A friend sent me another story about how above-ground swimming pool retailers cannot get the pools to sell you. So many of them are so sold out. People are calling across state lines saying, do you have a pool? I'll drive and come get it. But those pools just aren't in the pipeline. Nobody anticipated the pandemic, and so the inventory just isn't there. On some things, there's too much, and on some things, there is not enough of. I've noticed bicycles the same way, to say nothing of those stationary cycles these days. Amy Guth joins us on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Talk a little bit more about the business scene. I know you've noticed those sorts of things too, Amy. Just as bad as this has been, some businesses just by luck find themselves in the right place, don't they?
Yeah, that's right. It's been so interesting. I've been so curious to see how different industries have pivoted and how, you know, various industries have run into unexpected issues. Even skincare companies saying we don't have packaging because everybody started making hand sanitizer. We can't package our lotion. You know, things like that, I think, are so interesting to watch from local companies.
I spoke to an entrepreneur in the area who, what was it that he was making? It was a hand sanitizer, and he was able to get his operation up, but they couldn't get enough bottles to put the hand sanitizers in, plastic bottles and with a spray. And it's a good product, and it'll go. They have the liquid, although a lot of people are having trouble getting the liquid components for their products. But there's also been then a crush on, you know, dispensers, aerosol sprayers, and cans and bottles and plastic things like that. And when they do get the supply, the demand will be there. They will make money. But it's literally just getting all the components together, you know.
Yeah, that's right. It's really interesting to watch people, posting online, people going, hey, does anybody know where to get spray bottles and things
right,
like that
right.
to try to keep their business going?
And on that front, the U.S. Treasury says that they're going to name the businesses that took the small business assistance. Is that correct?
That's right. So the Trump administration said earlier today that it was releasing the names of businesses that took part in that aid. And initially, the secretary, Steve Mnuchin, he had said, I don't think we're going to do that because this might expose some proprietary information about businesses, especially people that are independent contractors or a sole proprietor or just, a couple of people in a shop kind of operations. But that's since shifted. And so they're going to be, naming those names of who received what, kind of trying to get a sense of and allow the public to have a sense of, hey, well, how does this reconcile with how many jobs we believed we saved? So, kind of the official number is that 84% of small business jobs were helped through this program. So that's a huge number. And so it's a matter of just kind of releasing the data to back that up. So we'll see as we start to comb through that. Interestingly, I think from all of that data around that, about 30 billion with a B of those loans were returned or canceled. That was mentioned. An administration official said that to a call with reporters earlier today. And so that's a couple of things that we've talked about. One of them is really high profile companies who maybe were publicly traded who got that money, and then like Shake Shack and Potbelly, who got a ton of public scrutiny and said, hey, you know what? No, we're going to give this back. So includes that. There was a group of borrowers that in their haste, like, we got to get this money really fast, applied at more than one place. So some people got funding from a couple of different banks. So that counts that return. And then people that just straight up said, you know what? I don't actually need this after all. I've not been impacted as hard as I thought. And so it includes 30 billion of returns in that number. So it's going to be interesting to see all the things we can learn from that data as that comes out. But of course, it also holds some degree of accountability, right? If people know in your community that, hey, this business got X amount of dollars, but wait a minute, they did a bunch of layoffs, then that's not going to reconcile. So it might make some companies sweat if they really didn't follow the spirit of that aid. But we'll see, how that goes. It's going to be kind of clumped by range of price. So you won't know exactly how much someone got, but you'll kind of see the range. Like this is the, just like how like a lot of donor data is laid out. You don't know to the penny, but within this range, this is what that person got. And that's how that's going to be laid out.
Yeah. So the motivating force there isn't, though, maybe shaming these businesses, but simply telling everybody, here's how much money went out. Reuters says that the average loan was about $107,000. As a taxpayer, here's what you're getting for your money.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Exactly right. So, of course, immediately a lot of pundits say this is political motivation, that the administration wants to be able to say they save jobs. Whether or not that's what the case is, I think it's important to say, hey, these are the jobs that were saved, and this is how we did it. This is the data that backs that up.
I'm going to let you go after your answer to this, but so the city does not expect to collect on people who don't quarantine, right?
That's right. Yeah, that's right. The city has just said, hey, if you've been to one of the 15 states where cases are rising, we're asking you to do the right thing. Stay home, quarantine for 14 days. But Dr. Allison Arwady, specifically from the public health commissioner, she's a public health commissioner, she specifically said, hey, we're not going to track you down. We're not tracking license plates. We're not doing that. We're just asking people to do the right thing. We have an opportunity to keep things going in Illinois, and all of our hard work, we don't want to undo it. And that's really her message.
Single-digit deaths on Sunday again. It'll be interesting to see what the numbers are again today. But so far, Illinois and Chicago are winning. Amy,
that's right.
Always nice to talk to you. Amy, thanks for your help today.
Thanks so much, John.